Mike, spring is upon us. It's finally April, and you know what that means.
National Park Week is here. Every April, the outdoors community celebrates National Park Week. And if you're making your way to some national parks this spring, then be sure to pack a moon travel guide with you.
We all know how time-consuming it is to research everything involved with planning a trip to a national park, from hiking trails to permits to campsites to accommodation. There's so much involved.
Don't spend months endlessly searching, trying to build the perfect trip, when you can do it all with Moon Travel Guides.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical and sustainable travel. They are committed to the national parks and ensure that all of their guides are up to date with the most recent and most helpful information for travelers.
And if you find yourself headed to Wyoming, then be sure to include the newest, most updated edition of the Moon Travel Guide to Yellowstone and Grand Teton, Hiking, Camping, and Wildlife. In this guide, outdoor expert Becky Lomax takes you through everything you need to see, know, and understand about these two neighboring parks.
From trip planning, the best spot and times for geyser sightings, food recommendations, lodging, the best trail information for hiking trails, updated maps. This Moon Travel Guide to Yellowstone and Grand Teton has you covered.
For more information and to purchase the Moon Travel Guide to Yellowstone and Grand Teton, be sure to visit moon.com.
Let your heart be your compass. Let Moon be your guide.
Hello and welcome to Trail Mix by Gaze at the National Parks. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dusty. If you're joining us for the first time, Trail Mix is the short format episodes of our show. While our long format episodes explore one hiking trail in one national park, one park at a time, Trail Mix allows us to dive deeper into things we didn't get to cover in our long format episodes, including interviews, history, science, and environmental justice.
That's right. And this Trail Mix episode is all about bots!
Bats. That's right. I used to like have a tiny little fear of bats.
Mm-hmm.
I don't anymore. And I think it's because
you're a creature of the night.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I think because of my birding stuff. Like that has sort of
things
just
that
made.
Fly have...
Actually, that's not true. I'll tell you exactly why I'm not afraid of bats mm-hmm. anymore. I used to hate them.
Seen in.
But then I went to Austin and watched like the thousands of them fly mm-hmm. out from under that bridge. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, they are just little like puppies of the sky. Mm-hmm. And so then I kind of fell in love with them.
Mm-hmm. Their young are called pups. So
pups.
There you go. Pups, pups, pups.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I have a relationship with bats yet. But I do remember like someone in our neighborhood had a bat in their house. And they asked my dad to come help try to get it out. And I remember that was like an interesting experience because I went with him. I was really young. I wasn't afraid of it, but it definitely was something that sticks out as a core memory for me.
Yeah.
Probably because it's the only time I did something with my dad.
There it is. The darkness.
So as a birder, do you feel compelled to be a batter, which is actually called a chiropertologist?
I feel like it's, and I may be wrong about this, but to me, it kind of feels like if your interest was in, I don't know, cars,
mm-hmm.
and then it was like, oh, do you have interest in like collectible, artificial, tiny little toy cars? It feels like a tertiary interest, I guess is what I'm trying
okay.
to say. Like
okay.
if you had an interest in real cars and then the question were, oh, do you think, you know, not that like birds or bats aren't real birds or something like that, because bats aren't birds. But,
right. They're mammals.
I don't know that I will go outside and look and try and find them, but I also guess I technically have done that in mm-hmm. Austin. Like I
sure.
did literally go to a place to mm-hmm. see bats. So maybe, I think I don't know that I'm like...
A chiropterologist. Sounds
or
like
a batter just yet. It does a little bit. Mm-hmm. But
going to the chiropterologist, I got to get my back cracked. My bat cracked.
There it is. I don't know that I have the same emotional connection to bats, even though like mm-hmm. I definitely am not afraid of
na,
them anymore.
Na, na,
there
na,
it is.
Na, na, na.
But that could develop.
It could. Like a Polaroid picture. Have we seen bats in any national parks?
Didn't we just see some last week? There were some bats
we
last
did.
Week. We saw some in Death Valley.
We did.
And no, Pinnacles.
In Pinnacles,
we saw
yeah.
some in Pinnacles mm-hmm. National Park, not Death Valley. So that's technically a time when we've seen a bat in a national park. We were in the national park. But yeah, I know that like
they're around.
They're around. There are bats in Mammoth Cave, but we didn't see any.
Right. And we were a little too early in the season for us to see bats in Carlsbad.
That's right.
Because or that is also a big bat park.
It is a big bat park. Mm-hmm. And we didn't see any in Wind Cave either.
Mm-mm.
So yeah, I don't know that we've seen them other than like literally it was like, oh, it's evening and it's getting cooler and darker outside. The bats are starting to show up.
Yeah. Well, if you listen to our season 6 summit on wildlife, you actually heard a lot about bats because many of the parks we discussed on the show that season, Mammoth Cave, Gateway Arch, Wind Cave, Big Bend, Hot Springs, and Shenandoah National Parks, all have healthy bat populations. But what should you really know when it comes down to brass tacks about bats?
Well, for starters, bats have been around for a long time, like more than 50 million years of a long time. And throughout that time on Earth, they had a major impact. In fact, bats play a major role in the ecosystems they inhabit across 6 continents and help those ecosystems to grow and thrive.
As the only mammal species that flies, some bats can fly up to 100 miles per hour. Globally, there are 1,400 species of bats, which range in size from 3 inches all the way up to having wingspans of up to 6 feet. This giant dichotomy in the species plays a role in their functions within the ecosystems that they are found within.
Bats spend about 4 months of the year in hibernation, from mid-November to mid-March. In the spring, they begin to feed most nights and begin to find colony sites. In the spring, female bats begin to form maternity colonies. It is in the late spring and early summer that pups are born, usually a single pup to each mother.
Something interesting about bats and bat pups, which is similar to bears and the birth of their cubs, is that these animals can choose when their eggs are fertilized. Bats mate in the fall months and store the sperm until the spring, when the eggs are ultimately fertilized, which allows them time to have a more abundant food supply for themselves and the health of their pup.
Throughout the year, their residence may change to suit their specific needs. The living place of a bat is called a roost. Bats may roost in the winter for hibernation or in the late spring and early summer for maternity purposes, and may find other roosting places in the late summer and early fall before ultimately finding a space to roost for hibernation again in the winter.
Bats can roost in a manner of places, including hollows of trees, caves, buildings, bat boxes, and larger hanging leaves. Bats find food in the areas around their roosts, in waterways, farmlands, grasslands, parks, and green spaces, essentially wherever insect populations or other food sources may be abundant. Bats can eat between 6,000 and 8,000 insects a night.
Mike can too.
Most bats will eat around half their body weight in insects a night, while some, especially pregnant mothers, can eat their entire body weight. Talk about a midnight snack.
In fact, this is one of 3 beneficial qualities of bats in the wild. Insect control. We love them for this.
Mm-hmm.
Over 70% of all bat species consume insects. So when you're out in the summer and it seems less buggy than normal, thank the bats. They're getting the job done. With the amount of insects that are consumed, it is estimated that bat populations help to save U.S. farmers around $23 billion a year in crop damage and eliminating or heavily limiting the use of pesticides. While bats do provide a great service, especially to farmers worldwide, the overuse of pesticides also have a drawback and can be incredibly harmful to bats, especially through limiting their food supply in what would typically be readily available areas.
Another major beneficial quality of bats is their role as pollinators. There are over 500 species of plants that rely on bats as their major pollinators. Some of these plants include bananas, mangoes, and guava. Without bats and their specifically evolved tongues to reach the nectar of these flowers, pollination and cross-pollination would likely not occur. To be clear, it's not the licking of the flower's innards for nectar consumption that does the trick for pollination. It's the fact that the bat, which often puts its face and body into the flower in order to reach the nectar, inadvertently picks up some pollen on its fur along the way, transferring it to the next plant. The process of pollination by bats is called chiropterophily. Go birds! Go Phils!
You know, a hoagie might be more appetizing than some nectar. That's all I have to say about that.
That was a little
hoagies.
You said that a little like
Melissa Shimenti.
No, you said it a little like the light. I can see the light. Drew Barrymore. It was a little Drew Barrymore-esque.
You know, a hoagie might be more appetizing than some nectar. Because every day you have to let the nectar in. You want to be able to see it and smell it and smell the flowers around you.
Okay.
My accent work aside. The third way in which bats prove beneficial is through seed distribution. And they are doing the damn work to make sure that forests regrow in ways that other animals do not. While seed scattering is done through the work of many animals, through their bowel movements, it's bats that create a great variety and dichotomy because of the distances that they cover in flight. These fruit-eating bats help to reforest through random droppings, which are planted in a healthy natural fertilizer, which gives them a head start. Everybody poops, but bats are certainly doing it better than most, as they are working to reforest clear-cut areas of rainforests. Thanks, bat poop.
Bats. I mean, who knew?
Right?
Mm-hmm. Chiropterologists. That's who.
That is for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it feels like every part of the bat's process when it comes to like its interaction with nature is like just super beneficial.
And finely tuned too.
And finely tuned to like all of its surroundings. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
Bats are so, so, so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Hey y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah with over 10 episodes across two separate seasons? It would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
Looking for some new art inspired by the national parks? Then be sure to check out our online store, The Gaze Shop.
This season, as we explore the landscapes of Olympic National Park, Mount Rainier National Park, Carlsbad Cavern National Park, and Guadalupe Mountains National Park, we've got some new items and designs coming your way.
Introducing our Olympic National Park and Mount Rainier National Park posters. These 12 by 18 posters make a great addition to any home or office, or a great gift for any lover of the national parks, even if that national parks lover is you.
Whether it's art for your wall or a sticker for your water bottle, you're sure to find something that sparks your love of the outdoors. Visit shop.gazeatthenationalparks.com to bring some of the national parks home with you. Unfortunately, bats don't have the best rap world over, especially where they are overwhelmingly believed to be vampiric, like they are in many Latin American countries. Only an incredibly small percentage of bats are vampiric. Most thrive on insects, nectar, or fruit. Just like Mike. But another knock against bats is that they're typically viewed as carriers of diseases, specifically rabies, which makes them an easy villain. In fact, less than 1% of bats worldwide actually have rabies, making it statistically more likely to get rabies from a dog than a bat.
So tell me, when did you know and have awareness that you were vampiric? That's what I want to know. Is it when you read Vanicula as a kid?
Oh, God, Vanicula.
Wasn't that a great book?
It was a great book. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But bats are host of other diseases which do not impact them due to their genetic makeup and low body temperature, like they would humans. Between bats, these diseases are not impactful, but spillover events to other species, zoonotic diseases, are possible, especially as humans and livestock encroach upon bat habitats. Batitats. I've done better.
You have.
That being said, bats are not vicious, nor are they looking to infect you. They would rather not ever interact with you at all.
Just like Mike.
There it is.
This brings up conservation efforts with bats and ensuring safe and healthy environments for their populations. Like many species, climate change and human encroachment has become detrimental to bats worldwide, including impacts of drought, severe weather, and phenology. Pop quiz, if you listen to our episode on wildflowers, you'll know what phenology is. Is it A, the study of fins of animals, B, the study of the shape of the skull to understand human behavior, or C, the biological timing of things? It's C, the biological timing of things. This is a great detriment to bat species, as timing of insects arriving at the end of hibernation cycles can be a major detriment to their food supply.
Human encroachment into habitats, specifically forests, which bats use for a variety of purposes, is another major slight against bat populations. Trees often become roosting spaces for bats. Clear cutting and other deforestation tactics endanger safe harbor for these winged creatures. Deforestation and wind turbines definitely are the biggest impacts to bats on the human front. While green energy is incredibly important, especially in the reduction of emissions, turbines are also responsible for tens to hundreds of thousands of bat deaths a year. As this clean energy source continues to grow, bats and birds should be taken into greater account when it comes to their safety.
While habitat loss, human encroachment, and climate change are incredibly impactful for bats, white nose syndrome is an even greater threat. And while white nose syndrome may seem like something 80 celebrities would have after exiting a bathroom at a party, this fungal disease is wreaking havoc on bat colonies.
White nose syndrome is a fungus. Just like Mike.
The whisper really was where it was at.
It was first seen as a major impact in the U.S. in the early 2000s, as major die-offs of colonies of bats were seen in New York in 2006. But this is not a disease that is relegated to the East Coast, as the disease has spread throughout the U.S. and Canada.
This disease is so named by the white fungus that grows on the bat's noses and muzzles. But the real danger comes in the impact to the bat's wings. This impacts bat's wings during their hibernation cycle, which in turn causes them to burn double the amount of energy during hibernation, which can often leave them starved to death before the spring arrives.
The disease almost exclusively impacts hibernating bats and the places where they roost. The fungus is able to be spread from bat to bat, so colonies become at risk easily. And the fungus can also survive in cave sediment, which has the potential for infections from winter to winter. Of the 47 bat species in North America, about half of them hibernate for the winter.
And unfortunately, while the disease is spread from bat to bat, there is also the human factor of spreading the disease as well. While humans aren't impacted by white nose syndrome, they can unwittingly carry the spores of the disease on clothing or shoes they may have worn in other caving sites.
If you remember, Mike, during our visits to both Mammoth Cave and Wind Cave National Parks, we walked across a decontamination pad, which helped to ensure we weren't complicit in the spread of white nose syndrome. These pads help to clean our shoes of any dirt that may have trailed with us prior to entering the cave. This was the case in Carlsbad upon our exit from the caves.
It seems as though bats have the odds stacked against them, like so many tiny but vital parts of ecosystems. So how can we help bats? Well, number one is to stay out of caves when directed to do so. Leaving bats alone, especially when they are hibernating, is paramount to keeping bats safe. Also, if you see a bat, don't disturb it.
Leave Batney alone!
I'm so proud of you. You can also help bats by helping to increase their habitat by planting native plants which attract insects, lower the use of pesticides, and help to create or preserve bat roosting spots, like building or installing bat boxes, or leaving dead trees alone, as bats like to roost there. Keeping the lights outside of your home low or off in the evening and keeping your pets inside at dusk can also help to protect these incredibly important flying mammals.
The sources for today's episode include the National Park Service, Cornell Wildlife Health Lab, Bat Conservation International, and the Bat Conservation Trust. And now, let's end this episode with a game. The title of today's game is Bats in the Belfry, and this is a game that every answer is going to contain the word bat in some way, shape, or form. You're going to be defining a word that's going to have the word bat in it.
Great.
Great. So for 100, this word, which contains the word bat, means to let up or loosen up.
And are the letters B-A-T in that order?
They are in the word. All will be in that order.
Okay. Oh, I don't know. Release, let out, notch down. I don't know.
What is a bait?
A bait.
To bait.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
All right. For 200, this word, which contains the word bat and which describes planes tumbling through the sky performing tricks, is not to be confused for people tumbling through the sky in circus tents performing tricks, though these words sound very similar.
So one of them is trapeze, right?
The overall term for what that would be.
Acrobatics.
Okay. So that would be people. So what would planes be tumbling through the sky be called?
I don't know.
Well, think of the word that they're moving through. What are they moving through?
Aerobatic.
There you go. You got it.
Oh, look at that.
A-E-O, A-E-R. Oh.
Uh-huh.
Okay, great. That makes sense. For 300.
So the word bat is in there, and the three letters are always next to each other.
They're always going to be next to each other.
Great.
I'm not fooling you here.
Sure. Okay, got it.
All right, for 300. This word, which means to combine together, usually for mailing, shipping, or exporting, contains the word bat at the top of the word.
What is bat?
That's correct. For 400, this word containing the word bat means to not participate in carnal delight. Someone who does not participate in carnal delight would be this.
What is celibate?
That's correct.
Okay.
Look at you. And lastly, 500. This word, which contains the word bat, may be used to describe someone who is foolish or idiotic, but it is also a decorative font element often used in press printing. And there are some fonts in, like, if you were to go into a font book on a computer, it would also be called this.
I don't know.
What is a dingbat?
Oh, a dingbat.
Just like you.
Or like a wing dingbat.
Mm-hmm. Just like me. Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Justin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.